Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen in Studio A, and Mr. Edwards and his entourage is over in Studio B, and we're broadcasting live from the Twin Cities of Minnesota. Mr. Edwards, how are you this morning?
I'm in kind of a state of shock, Doc. I was looking at this morning's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune. I know that folks want to repudiate the Star for writing a story which, you know, does not place one of our most powerful, well, they are actually the largest African-American or minority-owned business in the state of Minnesota in a bad light. But I'm just shocked because just in Thursday's edition of the paper, Don, Mr. Robbie Norman, who was the chief operations officer of the powerful Ford Construction World Headquarters right there on Plymouth Avenue in North Minneapolis, was talking in terms of how he and Richard and Gary Cunningham of MEDA and everybody were working together to reorganize, if you will, and et cetera. I look at the paper this morning, Robbie Norman has bailed out.
Talking about
he's going in another direction, and he gives a long, laundrette type of, here's what I intend to do. I would think that a community that has been bastardized as much as this community, the African-American community, has been by these characters, I would think that there's not much confidence, belief, and respect that is left, if you will. It's just unbelievable. $40 million. Just gone down the drain. I don't know what they were doing. I don't know if they were laundering the money, if you know what I'm saying, Don. You know, we've heard some stories, et cetera. But one of the things that our listening audience needs to know this morning is that we have recaptured a broadcast, I hate to say it, Don, a broadcast that was done by the Ron and Don team on, if I'm not mistaken, March 28th of 2018. Am I correct, Don?
Yes, sir. You are correct.
And which
that was
we
our original broadcast.
A renowned research analyst, and he just pulled the covers off of a number of people, including at that time the congressman for the 5th Congressional District. But we'll be getting to that. I understand we're going to play some excerpts from that interview on March 28, 2018, the Don and Ron program out of Minneapolis, St. Paul, across the world. And so go ahead, Don. What will we be hearing? What will we be hearing, our audience?
Well, as you said, Mr. Edwards, and as we continue to tell people, we actually broke this story on March 28, 2018, in regards to Thor Construction, because both of us looked at this celebration of this new Thor headquarters. But then we read deep into the literature and found out that Target was involved, Hennepin County was involved, and a lot of other people were involved. But at that time, there's a gentleman, Jake Johnston, from the Center from Policy and Economic Development out in Washington, D.C., who was looking at the contract that Thor got in Haiti to build houses. And the story that he wrote was about the houses being substandard, the sewage backing up, and I mean, you'll hear that in a minute here. And this clip is the interview of with Mr. Jake Johnston, myself and Mr. Edwards, asking some important questions that should have sent up signals last year in regards to Thor Construction. So I will go ahead and play that now. It's approximately 12 minutes. Mr. Edwards, anytime you want to stop, let me know.
All right.
Here it is, Jake Johnston, regarding Thor Construction in Haiti.
We started a small blog there just about a month after the earthquake in February 2010, and I've continued to run that since then and through today. And so this housing project, which we will eventually, I guess, get into more detail on, was one of the sort of biggest U.S. government projects post-earthquake in Haiti. And so that's sort of what piqued my interest initially with it and what the organization's been doing to sort of keep track of things over the years.
Okay, with that said, now, one of the stories that you have, it mentioned a local company here called Thor Construction, and we want to get right into this. Can you explain what happened, the money involved, and what was, why was it so silent? I don't know if you can answer that, but here locally, I just accidentally stumbled upon it when I was looking at some stuff for construction and Haiti and things like that. But it was a virtual silence here in the Twin Cities news, mainstream media. How did that come about? How that? Can you explain that piece so that we understand what was supposed to be done, the money involved? Yeah.
Yeah, of course. So, I mean, obviously, as I said, you know, the earthquake left more than 1 million homeless. And so getting a roof over their head became sort of priority number one. And the U.S. came up with this plan to build houses. And the initial plan was to build them around Port-au-Prince, the capital of Haiti. That's where most of the displaced people were. And due to some political considerations, most of the houses ended up being built up in the north, which was right down the street from a new industrial park that these donors planned to build, where workers would earn a little bit more than minimum wage and stitch T-shirts for Walmart. And the initial contract to build those houses up there in the north of Haiti, so far away from this earthquake, went to two companies, two U.S. companies. One was Thor Construction. They got around $18 million. And the other one was SEEPCO, which is based out of Maryland, and they got around $13 million. And their role was to do some of the sewage and sanitation work and also to provide construction management for the houses and Thor's building of the houses themselves. And that happened, that contract was awarded in April 2012. So, you know, all told, with these two contractors, we're talking around a $30 million project to build 750 houses. And sort of that was the idea. That was the initial project. And, you know, things went south pretty quickly. You know, it took a lot longer to build these houses than anticipated. The costs began to rise. When they were eventually finished, it became clear pretty quickly that something was wrong. The roofs weren't properly attached. The shutters on the windows were coming off. The sanitation systems, the sewage systems, were backing up and flooding the houses. And so this sort of, you know, is when I started paying attention and really sort of digging into this and trying to figure out, you know, what really happened with these houses.
Okay. And with that said, so there was additional funds beside the $18 million for construction. And what was that ballpark final amount?
Well, so that's the total amount that Thor got. Thor got a total $18 million. This other company, SEEPCO, 13. And that is a little bit higher than initially was supposed to be, you know, as I said, with these delays and a few overruns. But in 2014, sort of after the houses had been finished and it was clear that there was, you know, these structural issues with the houses and the flooding and whatnot, USAID, the U.S. Agency for International Development, which was funding the project, ended up giving a contract to a different U.S. company called Tetra Tech and asked them to perform an analysis of these houses, what was wrong. Now, I obtained one of their documents that's not public, but sort of got a hold of that. It detailed 29 instances of material substitution, field design changes, lack of quality insurance and quality control, and a lack of quality workmanship. And so that sort of began the process of, okay, where do we go from here? And at that point, Thor and SEEPCO, the two initial contractors, were basically pushed out and sort of moved to the side. And it was new companies that had been brought in to sort of figure out what was wrong and perform the remediation work that's been necessary over the last couple of years.
Okay, and with that said, if anyone wants to visit and look at, there's a picture on this website, the Center for Economic and Policy Research, and it's the story of the second USAID contractor suspended following housing debacle. Mr. Edwards, I'm going to pass it to you.
All right, thank you, Mr. Johnston, for taking the time to communicate with us and allow us to ask some questions on the sector. Let me go in this direction right off the bat. In a situation such as this, where there is certainly a possibility of malfeasance, non-performance, and et cetera, particularly on a government project in another country, you can usually expect that nation, in this case Haiti, would initiate a request or even a demand for corrective action. What has been the position of the Haitian government as it pertains to this entire fiasco?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think it sort of really gets to a broader point, which is that, you know, Haiti does have quite weak governance. It's been that way for a long time, and it is perpetuated by the fact that international organizations are often the ones that are brought in to do the work. So when the U.S. government funds these housing projects, they didn't hire local companies or go to local companies or the Haitian government. They went to U.S. contractors, and that does provide a a break in sort of the chain of accountability, right? Those companies are accountable to the U.S. government, not to the Haitian government. And so it's been the U.S. government, to the extent that there has been any accountability or oversight of this, that has been provided, not from the Haitian government.
There is, of course, a deputy or maybe a couple of deputy administrators for the USDA. Our research shows that there was testimony before a select committee of the United States Congress, primarily the House of Representatives. Can you enlighten us a tad on what began to happen when the USDA began to conduct, advance, and initiate an examination of what happened?
Yeah, so I think, again, there was an inspector general report that came out that identified some problems. There was this this other document that I got a hold of detailing all of these problems. Again, these weren't public things, right? And so while USAID and the administrator who you're referring to, I believe Beth Hogan, acknowledged some delays, some cost overruns, the overall picture they painted was still quite rosy, still say, okay, this is, it's a little bit more expensive, it's a little bit longer, but this is a normal process, things are okay. But underneath the surface, things were looking quite differently. And I obtained a report from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers through the Freedom of Information Act, and I'll just quote a little bit from that here: constructed with significant variances from the contract plans and specifications. These variances could result in major damage from a hurricane or seismic event, and excessive maintenance requirements if left uncorrected. I think this is a really important point. One thing the U.S. government was touting, and obviously this coming in the wake of a devastating earthquake, was the structural integrity of these homes and their ability to withstand natural disasters. And in fact, what had happened was that they used substandard concrete to build the homes. And obviously that has significant ramifications for the structural integrity of the house.
It's been since 2010 that this began, if you will. Is there any information on who introduced our poor construction to first USDA and then the USDA vouched, quote-unquote, for the competency of poor construction? Was there a process in which poor construction, an American company chartered in the state of Minnesota, was awarded the $18 million contract? Did they have any godfathers?
Well, I mean, I think, there's still probably much of this story that hasn't been told, and, waiting for those to speak up. I mean, I think it certainly seems like it was a new sort of work for Thor. I don't believe they had any previous operations in Haiti. And in fact, one of the things, Richard Copeland, the founder of Thor, has pointed to was, we as Thor just hired a Haitian subcontractor to do the work. And they hired BNF, which is one of the largest construction companies in Haiti. My initial reaction would be like, well, why are we giving money to an American company to hire a Haitian company? Why don't we just hire a Haitian company to do the work? But I think, there are so many layers to all of these contracting procedures. And certainly when you're talking about working internationally, and I think, as much as, you can sort of put blame on the contractors themselves and whatever actions they took to try and do this, the sort of ultimate responsibility is on the U.S. government that awarded these contracts and frankly fell down on the job providing the oversight necessary to ensure that these contractors were doing their jobs. Right? I mean, it's really, it's our taxpayer dollars, and it's those people on the ground who are supposed to be overseeing it who are ultimately responsible for what that end product looks like.
Let us go back now to Ms. Hogan, a deputy or assistant administrator. It's now 2014, going into 2015. Congress is at least being on the record, on the congressional record, is being familiarized, if you will, reported to, being made to have a better understanding of what happened on this, project in a small, impoverished nation called Haiti. What has the United States government, the USDA, done to recapture, if any, the dollars that certainly were inappropriately used for the facilitation and the building of this particular project? Has the United States government given any notification to Poor Construction that there should be a repayment of the $18 million?
Yeah, it's an excellent question. And just to give some idea of the money we're talking about here, it's not just the $18 million that went to Thor, the $13 million that went to SEEPCO, but also the money that went to the contractor to do the studies that had to figure out what was wrong with them. And now the contractor that has been hired to come in and make all of those fixes. And those additional costs on top of what Thor and SEEPCO initially paid was $21 million, right? So these initial mistakes cost the U.S. government $21 million. And so I think, you know, the question of who is being held accountable and sort of what is being done to address that is an excellent one, and one that I think many people are still looking for answers for. A few years ago, it did appear as though the U.S. was preparing or, you know, threatening at least a lawsuit against Thor and SEEPCO of some nature, but it doesn't seem as though anything has gone forward in that regard, and certainly my inquiries as to the status of that have not been responded to adequately. I will say both SEEPCO and Thor were suspended from receiving government contracts in 2015. That suspension lasted 2 years. And so while the remediation to the houses is, in fact, ongoing today, SEEPCO and Thor are free to receive U.S. government funds once again currently. Now, from what I Thor has not registered to receive government contracts at this point.
Okay, that is the interview with Jake Johnston from Public Policy Institute out there in Washington, D.C., who interviewed with us last March 2018 on the 28th. And that show is available on the Ron and Don Show Blog Talk Radio show page for those of you that would like to listen to the whole interview. Mr. Edwards, your thoughts?
Well, one of the additional series of questions posed by Mr. Allen and myself in that broadcast, which actually brought forward locally here in the state of Minnesota, the inadequacy, if not outright fraud, by Thor, if you will, in that project, was who the government representatives were that introduced, because see, Thor had no prior relationship and activities in Haiti, so somebody had to introduce them to the Haitian government. In the broadcast that we have just played, portions of the broadcast, about 14, 15 minutes, the research person for a powerful research institute in Washington, D.C., identified the then 5th Congressional Congressman, now Attorney General of the state of Minnesota, as the person that introduced and vouched for Thor Construction with the Haitian government. That is on the tape that Mr. Allen and Mr. Edwards are in control of, along with the company that broadcasts these programs, so it would be difficult for anybody to tamper with that. And I think that, you know, on that date of the 28th of March 2018, Mr. Allen and I were both taken back when the discussion turned to local politicians in the state of Minnesota, because one of the other revelations that Mr. Johnson provided to us was that Thor Construction was being suspended from work in Las Vegas, Nevada, where they initially had their so-called corporate headquarters, which they now identify. Now, that became important because there was controversy surrounding the disappearance of $3 million in money raised through some segments of the federal government, signed off on by the then 5th District Congressional Congressman, if you will, with the, and this was ironic, with the former wife of Mr. Copeland, but also there was a role of Mr. Cunningham, later to become the administrator of MEDA, and his wife, who also happened to be the mayor of the city of Minneapolis. Mr. Allen and I, on that program and on subsequent programs, raised the question about conflict of interest. Now, in the two newspaper articles, Mr. Allen, that have appeared in the last 3 days, Thursday's edition of the paper and this morning's edition of the paper, there has not been a real in-depth examination of the role of the city of Minneapolis, because we have gone into the archives, working closely with the National Research Institute in Washington, as well as others. And in publications by the same Minneapolis Star Tribune, the initial entities that were being involved were, and one specifically, was the city of Minneapolis. Now, a discussion with a city official at a location outside of the state of Minnesota. We were a part of a delegation that had been sent from the Twin Cities to meet with authorities dealing with law enforcement matters in Seattle, Washington. I had an opportunity to have a quiet dinner with the then Fifth Ward Council member, Blong Yang. Good man. And I now can well understand, though, why maneuvers were made to oust him as the council member for the Fifth Ward. But in the conversation in Seattle, Washington, with him on and about the 1st of March, 2015, Mr. Allen, I asked specifically the question of the councilman at that time, how much money had Thor actually put up? What Blong Yang said to me, and by the way, Blong Yang is an attorney, if you will, so he understands that he's not going to perjure himself. He told me an interesting question upon my return to the Twin Cities. I had conversations with you, Mr. Allen, that Thor had not put up a penny as it pertains to what was initially a declaration of a $30 million facility that was going to be built. Mr. Allen and myself had discussions about that. I had discussions with additional people, but it was the conversation with Councilman Blong Yang in Seattle, Washington, where we were there as part of a delegation on behalf of the Department of Justice, meeting with the City of Seattle and the Seattle Police Department, who was under federal receivership. Boy, that receivership thing looked like it's becoming pretty big, right, Don? And so,
yeah, it is.
I had known for quite some time that a number of somebodies was not telling the truth about how much money was put up. Well, now we can refer to the Minneapolis Star Tribune, this morning's edition to the Minneapolis Star Tribune, for construction and their other quote-unquote subsidiaries like Global whatever that was identified in this morning's paper. And I was shocked to see that within a period of 24 hours, Mr. Allen, that Robbie Norman, formerly chief operations officer for the now almost defunct Floor Construction, had already bailed out. I refer our listening audience to Thursday's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, the major white newspaper here in the state of Minnesota, in which both Mr. Cunningham, Mr. Copeland, and Mr. Norman were talking in terms that they were working tirelessly to upright the ship, that they were committed, and et cetera, and et cetera, and et cetera. And it was the writers, Mr. St. Anthony, if you will, Neil St. Anthony, David Chenin, who, when I saw David Chenin's name, I knew that the Star Tribune is also looking at criminal activities, criminal enterprise, and et cetera. Chenin handles cases dealing with law enforcement and public safety matters, and then Mr. Mannix, who covers City Hall. I'm not sure why the decision was made not to reflect the role of the City of Minneapolis under then-Mayor Betsy Hodges, and, of course, her own relationship with her husband of record, if you will, Gary Cunningham. And then all their statements in this morning's edition, of the paper, Mr. Allen, all of a sudden everybody talking to her, well, we've done all we could, nothing more we could do, that's it. It's not going to work like that. And in closing on this end, the decision by Sunrise Bank, who, by the way, yeah, obviously has a significant advisor and consultant on an unofficial basis, the well-respected and beloved former president, Dorothy Bridges. You know, we haven't seen her name and et cetera, but we all know and remember what happened to Dorothy Bridges during the time that she was the chief executive officer of the former Franklin National Bank, and how she was ripped off by a whole group of individuals who were all a part of this, as someone said in the posting, this Northside Mafia that has been operating around here, though half or three-fourths of the people we've been talking about live, you know, far outside the city of Minneapolis. I just think that Sunrise has made a heck of a move. It'll be interesting to see what the Hennepin County District Court does with the motion that has been filed to place what's left of Thor in receivership and to appoint a special master who will be some white attorney with one of the big white law firms downtown to protect the interests of Target, the county, and the city of Minneapolis, and anybody else that's got something invested in this. It is a terrible situation as a community that we find ourselves being faced with. We as a community, the African-American community, we were taken to the cleaners, man. We were taken to the cleaners.
Yes, we were, Mr. Edwards. And in the story, if you look at the story here in the Star Tribune from yesterday, if I'm not mistaken, it says that Sunrise Bank alleges Thor is generally not paying its debts as they become due, including payroll obligations to its employees.
That is
and
in this morning's edition of the paper, Tom. That's it,
yes.
Right there in
it's
this morning's edition. Yes, sir. Go right ahead, sir.
Mm-hmm. It says, in requesting a general receiver, the bank alleges Thor does not have sufficient liquidity to continue to operate, and multiple creditors might attempt a free-for-all liquidation of the company. So I guess my question, Mr. Edwards, because I only answer questions I can't answer, is what was all the sunshining about this big grand opening and this company was going to change the face of North Minneapolis in the corner of Plymouth and Penn? Now they're in the same situation, basically. Well, they're actually in a worse situation than the Urban League across the street. And what is the fate to SD's funeral home? You know, we haven't
absolutely
even gotten into that piece. Yeah, we
yeah,
haven't even gotten
absolutely
to that piece. And also, you look at what's going on in over north in that community. We have two co-ops, the Worth Co-op and the co-op up there on Weber Parkway. Now, we already know from the article in the Star Tribune yesterday, actually from, excuse me, My North News, not the Star Tribune. It will be in the Star Tribune eventually. It says Worth Co-op will not reopen on the corner there of Golden Valley Road and Penn. And it seems like who's ever in control gets a few step and fetch it and throws a little cash at them, and they celebrate this stuff in our community to make us think that we are progressing and moving forward, and all of a sudden, these things are shut down. Thor hasn't even
absolutely
been open in a year.
And please repeat that again so people understand, because that was highly touted, and if I'm not mistaken, that building is the residency of one of the members of our school board, okay, as well as the relative of the current city council member for the fifth ward. It took them long enough to open, and then they lasted,
yes,
I don't know, what it had been, about four months, 3 months? And
yeah, about
the,
4 months.
The alternative media is now reporting the collapse of that little facility, as well as there will be a collapse of another economic venture on 44th and Camden in that area.
Yes.
What I think you just said, Mr. Allen, is extremely profound. It's all part of the game. Word is now that one of the reasons that David Chinnan, who is the top criminal investigative reporter for the Star Tribune, is on this, is that there have been allegations of the laundering of money. And it has to do with what's happening in Las Vegas, where our caller, we have played on this program. We don't have to listen to none of that BS about making stuff up. is that our Thor construction was being disqualified as it pertains to contracts from the United States government, etc. They only got back on the eligibility list in 2018, the very end of 2018, and officially they may not be back on. And I wonder how much of an effect that had on the county board and the city of Minneapolis and other entities. But I want to remind people that there was collusion and there were actions carried out by high-powered representatives of the city of Minneapolis, and it raises questions to Nita. Oh, by the way, I found it fascinating that Nita's representative, who had just said in Thursday's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, how they were doing this nonstop negotiation, they had deals, who are now saying in this morning's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune that everything just fell apart. Fell apart how?
And that's very interesting, Mr. Edwards, that you bring that Mita. You know, Mita's run by the, like you said, the former mayor, Bessie Hodges' husband, Gary Cunningham. And Thor should be a multi-billion dollar company. And so when I saw his name in both of those articles in the newspaper on Thursday and today, it kind of troubled me because I don't know any organization that he's raised $100 million for or turned anything around. You can't do that working in the nonprofit sector. And so that's an interesting key point that we need to make people very aware of is that, you know, have you done this before? Can you do this? And we haven't seen the economic benefit 60,000 plus residents of North Minneapolis or in the city of Minneapolis, period. So with that said, Mr. Harris, we have our phone, our switchboard is lit up, and I would like to take a call from a friend of the show.
Let's do that, Mr. Allen. Thank you. Go right ahead. The phone lines are open up, and we're not holding anything back. Go ahead.
Let me get her here. You're live on the air. Ms. Lisa Dean, how are you?
Good morning.
Hello.
Oh, my gosh. This is a lot of information you guys are sharing is all over the place. I want to say that. One thing I wanted to say is that, speaking as a member of the community, this is very concerning as far as what's going on with Thor, and also with my experience working with the City of Minneapolis Contract Compliance. I know that there's a process, and all of the major projects are funded by the City of Minneapolis. It doesn't matter where they are, if they're in the city, they're funded. So Thor is one of them.
Yes.
But I guess in this case, when we're looking at North Minneapolis, we have a lot of people in power who are African American who got together to use Plymouth and Penn Avenue as a symbol of an economic status going on into the future, as well as over there on Golden Valley and Road and Penn. And so we got all this money, and Mr. Edwards, you said Blanc said that Thor didn't invest anything, but when we read in the newspaper, we see that they did invest announced that they were, or made a declaration, I believe, that they were going to invest into this project. But the investment was not money, but it was investing into the community. So everyone had their hand in that cookie jar, and a lot of them were, their hands were had the same color as us. So they have our own interest. Hopefully, we thought that they had our interest at play, starting from the construction. And so now we find out after everything is built, we see that Estes has a new funeral home, and we see that some of this money that we thought Thor was all going to Thor had also was a part of a three-block renovation, and North Point was involved in that. And so when we read a paper from North Point talking about they are using a co-op that is also a symbol of our community for space for a food shelf, when they just got millions of dollars to rebuild their building as part of that Thor project, I'm not understanding that. How are you renting space when you just got millions to renovate your own space? So I'm trying to figure out why are we doing this. One thing I wanted to say is that in the newspaper it says that Thor is not. Sunrise has said that store will not be able to bring enough revenue in. They don't think that they'll be able to sustain its business. And one thing I want to say is, as far as with our community, we need to move up in there and give that them people some money, because this is a black-owned construction company. They have been – I became aware of them when we had our tornado in North Minneapolis, when Thor was the number one construction company, black-owned, that came over here that was a part of the renovation. And we don't even know we're still looking for that money. So when it comes to this black-owned, can KMOJ move up in there? I mean, can Stella Whitney West, who is deciding to move it to the co-op, can they rent some of that space over there so that the bank can be convinced that the black community has enough funds to invest in their own community, like what we are seeing with this co-op, where Mr. Paulson said that the black community don't even have enough money to sustain a co-op. So, I mean, we have to figure out how are we, the black people who say we're here for, because a lot of people who have their hand in the cookie jar, they don't live in North Minneapolis, but they are capitalizing from going to the city, the government, the banks, and all these people and telling them, oh, we are going to help this community, help the people over there get jobs, this, this, and that. And these are black folks that's doing this. So we need to start holding ourselves accountable, those that we sit up in these conventions, galas and dance and all this old stupid shit that our people are doing, but they're not investing in our community. And all the people that's dancing only making $30,000 a year, because, and we know that 70% of our Americans are living from paycheck to paycheck. So what are we dancing for? We need to stop stepping and fetching, like you said, and dancing and being so proud to be entertained. Because when we look at our community, I mean, it's dirty, nasty. I was just over at the Minneapolis Urban League, North High, the Park Board, the schools, North High, all these places on Tuesday to ask them about keeping their facilities clean. I looked at Thor, and I thought that because they were new, that they had it all under control. And then throughout the week, there's a shooting at North High. Then there's a we see that our big symbol is about to be taken over. Who's coming to take over that building over there on Plymouth? That's a lot of money. The black folks itself can't come together to sustain that building. So what will they turn it into, and will they maintain their mission to make sure that they hire people in that build? I mean, in the community, using those investments, that $30 million investment that they just made in the community. We want that back as a community. We want to see the people who made that decision, who said yes, who cashed those checks in their name, go back into that community and get the money from the people that they're eating off of and have them reinvest. Train them how to keep a job. Train them how to go to school. Don't train them on how to come to you and ask you for help and beg all the goddamn time. I mean, it's like now we're crawling and we're crumb snatching now. We're going from poverty pimping to crumb snatching. And this is a shame. And I'm speaking on behalf of as a community member. Okay, go ahead.
You make a good
point. That's what I wanted to say.
You make a good point there. Thank you for calling, too. You make a good point there, Ms. Dean. And, mm-hmm. and the problem is that I'm seeing is that this is a perpetual effect of dealing with the same HNICs in North Minneapolis all the time, who they put the money in the pocket. They won't give Elisa Dean or Mr. Edwards or Mr. Allen a chance to do anything over North, because we might mess up and make a bunch of people successful, which will take their petri dishes of disparities away. Okay?
Well, one thing I want to say about them giving Elisa Dean, these are the people that I wouldn't go to ask for the money. I know how to do exactly what they did and go through the process of going to the city and asking them to give me some money to fund a project that I have. There's a process. I know how to apply for a grant from the Minneapolis Foundation to get what I need for my organization. It's just that our people, we are a crabs in a barrel. It doesn't matter what I'm doing. They're looking at, they are going to take some of my money, and I don't want that to happen. So I'm going to stop them so that I can get all the money myself. So it's our mentality that we have as black folks in our own community as holding each other back. We don't network with each other. We don't know how to market with each other. And we always hear our so-called leaders talking this unity. That's what it's all about. If you're in power and you're able to do something in our community, network with someone who is able to do that. Don't try and be us against them. That's what we have been seeing in the last 30 years when we had the Jamar Clark incident. We saw on the news every day how our community leaders were unable to work together to even solve that problem, to turn a police department back into a park. I mean, so we don't even know what the hell we are doing, but we know how to spend that money and take that money and go fly all the way to Africa.
Mr. Allen, well, we need to I'm getting text messages. We got other calls. Oh, appreciate it, Ms. Dean.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Continue to listen. Caller 4616, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Very good topic this morning. I'm surprised that it took almost damn near 50, 60 years for you all so-called leaders to get the covers pulled back on them. And it takes a white man to tell you all that you're doing wrong. Now, going back to what that sister just said, you got a litany list of Negroes, and we just going to go down the list real quick. I don't hear Don Samuels and his lovely wife going to the bank and getting some money. They sitting on $20 million. That a person wrote a grant, they haven't given none of their monies back. Nobody's paid the bank back. And where in the dickens do you get a loan from a bank where it takes you 9 years to get anything back? I'd like to find out where that bank is at, because I'm pretty sure everybody in the black community could use a little loan right about now and take 9 years to pay some parts of it back. So we got all of the so-called leaders, that don't have a leadership ability to carry a cockroach across Plymouth Avenue. But like Ms. Dean said, when money's around to be given out, all the hands are there. You check out their zip codes, they don't live in North Minneapolis.
You're absolutely correct, sir. You're absolutely correct.
Now, those higher ups downtown, let's go ahead and put it all out there, Mark Stenglin. He had a lot to do with this. He signed the dotted line. Chief Ellis, who's supposed to be our new attorney general, he's dirty as all outdoors. His son don't know what the hell he's doing. The wifey is living in subsidized housing. I'm just trying to figure it out. What is we going to do? Is we got enough lawyers to handle some of these people? Because some of them need to be in the federal penitentiary, up under the penitentiary, and get a key to the jackrabbit. You don't get out until the jackrabbit gets caught. You know what I'm saying? But everybody now, this is why that phone ain't jumping off the hook over there, because all of the hooks that got the money that are crooks is afraid to call. If they ain't in town right now, they either in Jamaica, Africa, or somewhere hot enjoying that money that they ain't got.
Thank you for the call.
Thank you, sir.
Greatly appreciate it.
Take care. Yeah.
And thank you, too, gentlemen, for pulling the covers back off of these here poverty pimps, a.k.a. corrupt bastards.
All
thank
right,
you,
thank you, sir.
We have another caller. 4013, you're live on the air. Go ahead. Caller 4013, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning. Larry Tucker, good morning. I enjoyed the previous conversation. There's a lot of missing pieces. Number one, these people aren't business people. They're social workers. That's number one. Number one, Thor has never owned his company. It's always been a pass-through. He's not a construction company. He's a construction manager company. That's number three. He's not a business person. Only 5% of any cultural group is going to be business people. That's just the way it works. Thor, I was told that he had problems years ago when he first started the building. He would not hire any black people. He thinks that the white man ice is colder. That's just how he operates and how most of them black Minnesota operates. There are three areas that we fall into. Either we got a job in corporations, or we run a social program, or we crooks. Blonde Yang, I had to speak to in a very unfavorable manner. He told me that there was no legitimate business people in North Minneapolis. And then I said, then you're saying that we're all pimps and crooks. Blonde Yang was not our friend. And I told him as much. You got to be careful about these people coming to the table acting like sheep, but they're fox in wolf's clothes. There is so much that's missing in all this discussion. Gary Cunningham is not a business person. Don Samuels told me that he didn't think black people should be in business. The business of America is business. You're not going to achieve parity without being in business. You go in the room, if you go in the room over 30 seconds and you're not able to discern the deficiency of these people, then you have problems. If you don't know who to mark at the table, then you to mark at the table. Okay? That's what my daddy told me back in the 50s. These people doing the best they can with what they got. If you don't have much, you can't do much. Okay? And if you want to be a social worker, I have no problems with that. But don't come over here trying to be a business person because you're not business people. I was told by employees from Thor years ago that he did not know what he was doing and that the white boys was beating him up, putting down 51 hours a week and didn't even come to work. Okay? And he was told that and did not do anything about it. He don't run no business. He's a pass-through. He's a pass-through. His modus operandi is hire me and I'll set you free. You don't have to worry about no other black contractors. Just hire me and I'll be your affirmative action piece. That's his modus operandi. Okay? He went out in Vegas and did that. And the black folks in Vegas told him, don't bring that Minneapolis stuff out here because we'll bury you in the sand and they'll never find you. Okay? Everybody has a chance. They need to give money to people just to say that they're giving money to people. The co-op never was a viable operation. Okay? I hope Devin Jarge do well with his building. He will do well on the rental side. But Kevin Garnett and those basketball players, and I have a great nephew who's a basketball player, and they beat him out all his little money. Okay? There's old saying in the community, in the business community, the man with the experience and the man with the money. The man with the money ends up with the experience, and the man with the experience ends up with the money. I listened to some of the discussions earlier, and some of them was on point, and some of them missed the point. People deal with people they feel comfortable with. They do not feel comfortable with Ron. They do not feel comfortable with Don. They do not feel comfortable with Larry. They do not feel comfortable with Lenny Chisholm. There's a lot of people they don't feel comfortable with, and they're not going to do business with you when they don't feel comfortable with you. You got to understand that. I've had deals that I went to the banks and got money just on my signature. I've had bankers that say, Tucker, I'm tired of you coming to me for this little bitty money. Get the hell out of here. Wrote me a check in his own bank account. Told me, go downstairs and cash it. You're wasting my time. Come on, just on my word. I got bonding from people. Over $250,000 in bonding and didn't have to spend a damn dime. It's character. It's character. And if people believe you, they knew that these guys didn't have it. You go in the room with them. I've been in the room with them. They sent some little white kids in there that didn't know what the hell they was talking about. And I said, I'm an old street kid, not unlike Ron. If you don't spend 5 minutes in the room and you're not at 5 seconds or 30 seconds and not able to discern that this guy's a fraud, then you got problems. You got problems. I went in the room with those guys, and at 30 seconds, I said, these people don't know what they're doing. Where's your point of reference at? If you don't inform yourself. And one other thing, and I'll say this in closing. I've been to court on hearings about 43, 45 times. And the first thing the judge asked one of the clients, asked one of the appraisers that was testifying, where'd you get that information from? Who did you talk to? And he said he talked to one of the attorneys, and the attorney blurted out, you didn't bring that BS to me. You didn't get that BS from me. Who did you talk to? Who did they visit with? I visit with 3, 4, 5 different people and get different ideals and concepts and then draw a conclusion. These people live in a little cubbyhole, and they're not business people. They're social workers, and they're not leaders. They're spokespersons. Get your information correctly. Stop. I had the opportunity to go to the corner of Plymouth and Penn back in the 70s, and the Negroes told me that I had to get a letter of credit. I had 2 letters from major banks saying that they thought the idea was sound and that they was willing to support it. The Negroes told me, well, I don't know whether you can do that or not. Where are you going to get the money from? I said, here's a letter from the bank saying that he's willing to back it. Two major banks in this city, the president. Okay? The same president asked me, what did I think about John Warder? I told him, sir, you didn't get to be the president of this bank and asking me about a John Warder. You are able to discern. You didn't become president of the bank not being able to discern who these people are. And the next week he closed the bank down.
Yeah.
We don't have enough experience.
Appreciate it. You know, this is all well and good. Appreciate it. And I think we got some more calls coming in because we're trying to figure out here this morning what happened to $40 million. Thank you, Brother Tucker. Thank you.
Somebody put it in their pocket.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. But maybe they can tell that to a grand jury. That's why they got David Shannon on the case. Go ahead, Mr. Allen. Any other calls?
Yeah, our caller number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And, Mr. Edwards, I went to the switchboard, and people just want to listen. That's in there. So that's last caller. We have about 9 minutes, 20 seconds left of this episode of the Ron and Don Show. And I'd just like to make a quick observation,
let's do this for clarification and et cetera. Let's re-identify the caller, the recording from March 28th, a leading researcher for one of the major research institutes in the United States and in the world. Let's just talk in terms of him, and that the entire tape is available through either Mr. Allen or the blog radio. But just identify that individual who brought us the information and who did the investigative examination on Thor and its relationships. Just break that down for us again, Mr. Allen.
Yeah, this gentleman's name is Mr. Jake Johnston. He's with the Center for Economic and Policy Research out of Washington, D.C., who has been following Thor Construction and who was a guest on our show last March 2018, mm-hmm. March 28th. That show is available on blogtalkradio.com, The Ron and Don Show, on our show page. You could pull it up and listen to the interview, the whole interview, in its entirety, where he does mention some local names and some folks you should be concerned about in the black community. And we listened to a 12-minute clip from him talking about the substandard housing in Haiti. I guess when they flushed the toilets, the whole sewage system would back up. The roofs weren't put on the houses right. And this was a contract where Thor was given a contract, and Mr. Johnston said that they hired a local Haitian company. So it's little to no oversight is what he's saying.
And
he
by
goes
the way,
into
the total amount turned out to be probably better than $60 million in the Haitian situation. And for clarification, and let me just say this about Bong Gang, people have a right to their opinions and et cetera. But one of the things that I give Long Yang credit for and have to give him respect is that when asked the question about what was the investment made by Thor Construction and et cetera, Long Yang said in 2015, and correctly he said, that Thor had not put a penny in. The young lady that called was in error. Mr. Allen and I have looked at the documents, if you will, being filed in the Hennepin County and Ramsey County District Courts asking for receivership. There is no indication that that Thor spent a single penny, invested it. As Mr. Tucker said, they are clearly a pass-through. But what's more serious about that, and it's the reason in my mind that David Chenin of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, their top crime investigative reporter, has been put on it because somebody, either the federal U.S. attorney for the Federal District of Minnesota or even old Mike Freeman or the county attorney in Ramsey County, Choi, are looking to take this matter before a grand jury because these folks are going to get their money back one way or another. That means that folks may start losing houses out there in Las Vegas and around here in the Twin Cities. I would have suggested that Mr. Copeland and others probably need to get to the bank yesterday and get them safety deposit boxes open and get that cash and money that they've been hiding in them safety deposit boxes and et cetera in them banks, because one thing banks will do when another bank has been injured, quote unquote, they will tear your business. Okay? Would you not agree,
oh, yeah.
Mr. Al? Oh, yeah.
I agree 100%.
And so
Mr. Edwards,
I think that David Chenin and them are now looking at and are talking to the U.S. Attorney's Office and to local authority. I'm not sure, but based on additional information that's on the tape of the program that we did with Mr. Johnson, I'm not sure that Minnesota's new Attorney General, if you know what I'm saying, Mr. Allen, I'm not sure that he would not have to declare a conflict of interest.
Yes. And we have another caller. Caller 1914, we have 4 minutes left of the show. Four minutes left in the show. Caller live. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just had a couple quick questions. One is, Mr. Edwards, you mentioned money laundering earlier. Was that I just wanted to ask you about that. But also, why do you think that Target and Sunrise Bank and et cetera were so lenient with this company? That doesn't make sense to me. They paid, from what I understand in the article, like $7 million to people that should have been paid by Thor, I thought.
Oops.
But I don't get I don't understand that at all.
I think that at some point that the officers of Target, officers of Hennepin County, officers of the city of Minneapolis, I think that they may have to answer that question, sir. You kind of sound like an attorney when you ask that question. I think they will have to tell that question and respond to that question and respond before a federal grand jury. I keep repeating, there is a reason that the Star and Tribune assigned David Chenin, their chief criminal investigative reporter, to this story. There's a reason. Star Tribune already knows. They've certainly been talking to the attorneys from Sunrise, sir, and they know where, quote-unquote, the ghosts are. And I just think that folks better get ready. Like I said, all that property and them big houses and things in Flagstaff, Arizona. Oh, look out now. Las Vegas, Nevada, here in the Twin Cities and et cetera, the woman who called in and talked about zip codes and such, she was certainly correct. But when you talk in terms of the laundering and the theft of over $40 million, it's this community, the African-American community, that is hurting, but no one really, really cares. But your question is a valid one, sir. Maybe talk back to us next week. But it's a valid one. And for construction, it should be required to answer under oath. And so should Target, City of Minneapolis, Hennepin County. Thank you, sir.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Hey, Mr. Edwards, I'd like to add something there. We have like 2 minutes left in the show, but to the local community here, especially the black folks in Minneapolis, the Twin Cities, St. Paul, and the surrounding suburbs, if you pick up one of the black newspapers and this story is not on the front page, you need to look very carefully. You need to look very carefully and see what's going on. Because I attest that this will not be on the front page of the Insight News or the Spokesman. And we should be tired of this promotional protection of our community, where things are not well. And we need to go ahead and make sure that we not only hold, these people at Thor, the co-op, the city council members, the people that signed off on all this accountable, but we also have to hold the people we get information from accountable.
Yes.
This is a headline story. This is a big story in the black community. And if you cover black news in the Twin Cities, if this is not on the front page of your papers, the next issue that comes out, you need to go away. We have a minute left of the show, Mr. Edwards. Closing comments?
Very quickly, I find it appalling that in this morning and in Thursday's edition of the paper that agents, representatives of Thor had the nerve to say that they were moving 50 employees from their quote-unquote facility in Fridley to the offices in North Minneapolis when 36 individuals who were working for the company for approximately a month after the big celebration were let go, including a number of African-American women who are mothers, single parents, and et cetera. I'm not understanding the writing of that particular quote by these officials and et cetera, that we're going to bring 50 employees in from our facility in Fridley. Okay?
Okay. Ten seconds left.
Tucker said, very quickly, Mr. Tucker said something very interesting, because Thor has had a history of really not high.
But I say we want to quit moving until we get what we deserve.